This podcast is brought to you by LearnMyCraft.com. Now, we've all experienced the frustration of not having enough time to practice your art. So whether you're a total beginner or an experienced artist, LearnMyCraft has got you covered. With easy-to-follow tutorials using coloured pencils and pan pastels, you can level up your animal art skills today in as little as 45 minutes. Make practice fun and easy again at LearnMyCraft.com. Welcome to the Animal Art Podcast. Today's episode is really special as I'm joined by the team from Pan Pastel. If you've ever been curious about trying Pan Pastel or you're looking for a new material to take your work to the next level, then this episode will be invaluable for you. We explore Pan Pastel's unique no-dust pan format and the best ways to apply it to your surface, as well as tips for blending and layering and ways to combine it with other mediums for stunning effects. The Pan Pastel team offered so much helpful information and I left the conversation feeling inspired to experiment with their techniques in my own work, and I think you will too. So let's go.
All right. So just to get started and introduce ourselves, I'm Bryce Lampe. I'm in marketing at Golden. And so a lot of what I'm involved with is connection with artists and communicating to let them know all about our products, to listen, you know, to their concerns and issues, to see where we might, you know, be able to develop a product or improve a product to meet those needs, and to you know, make sure they're informed about how our products perform, what they can expect, and all the help and services that we have to offer, which includes the team that Mike's a part of.
Yes, I'm Mike Townsend. I'm a materials and application specialist here at Golden. And that means I get to not only play with paint and test it, but a big part of our role is we do a lot of work with email and calls. And we love working with artists. We've worked with many artists over the years. I've been here since 1989, believe it or not. So we really enjoy that connection with the artists. It's a really important part of who we are as a company. We encourage people. I'll drop our help@goldenpaints.com email address. Any question, it's not about just our materials. Artists might have just a question about how do I do a mural? I just said yes to a commission. We will be more than happy to walk you through like the steps needed to make that happen.
So
you're successful, we're successful.
All right.
Fantastic.
Diving into Pan Pastel. It's they're artist quality soft pastels, but it's in a unique pan format. So it's a cake, kind of, you know, similar to, you know, what you might experience with makeup, that's applied with specially designed soft sponges. So it's really a unique way to work with and apply pastel, you know, exactly, you know, so it's akin to painting with dry color, the way you brush and put that on. The mission for Golden Artist Colors is to grow a sustainable company dedicated to creating and sharing the most imaginative and innovative tools of color, line, and texture for inspiring those who turn their vision into reality. With our broad line of acrylics, mediums, everything else that we have, you know, that we started with in the acrylic world, that's all about giving artists options, different ways to work. And so you can see how Pan Pastel and that, you know, innovative new way to apply pastels fits in with that mission. So a natural fit for Golden Artist Colors.
Yes, definitely. No, they're definitely different. I always get asked whenever I take pictures of them, what are those in the pots? People have never really seen pastels in that form before. So it's incredibly unique and beautiful.
Yeah, we get a lot of that from artists, and, you know, they, because of that uniqueness, sometimes they don't exactly know what to do with them until they, and so there's tons of videos, tutorials. You know, they're really easy and direct to work with. So it's just kind of getting over that, you know, initial hesitancy and trying them out to see what they do.
Yeah.
And yes, definitely.
We'll talk about many ways for artists to help just get started with these. I think that it should be a nice encounter with the paint. It's not, we think, you know, although they're a powdered pigment per se, they're just beautiful color to work with. And it's just that immediacy of having the material right there in your hand and pushing it around, and just, you know, that contact is very much like with watercolor, where there's just, you get in tune to the pigments and the surface, and both are very important to that experience. And the tools are really the big important part, the soft tools. As you know, I heard that your favorite is, there's the triangular wedge. Is that correct?
Yes, the wedge one. Where is it? I've got so many of them that I'm using. Try and keep my colors separate so they don't go muddy. But yeah, I use this little wedge one just because it means that you can do all the little details and marks. And it's just, I feel like it's more precise than the other tools, but I haven't actually used the other ones that extensively because this, I just fell in love with this style of doing it. And even the sponges, you've got the fatter sponges with like there's like a round shape and like a square shape. And yes.
And there's
edge
one, like the one Bryce has.
Yeah.
And there's these different shapes. And just like there's different shapes with the palette knives that we'll call them, the blue palette knives, is that they're all meant for all these different types of ways to work. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the type of mark you're trying to make and how you're blending. And what's great is these tools actually do work with other drawing media. So if you need to smudge some charcoal or some graphite, these are perfect for that as well. They're also really easy to clean. So they start to get to where they look like these ones on down here below. And they get to where they look like they're loaded up with color. And if you just can't get a lot of it off, just use a paper towel.
Okay.
And all you do is simply just remove the excess until you stop seeing a lot of color, and then you can load it right up into a new color, a new pan, and you won't get a lot of contamination if you remove the excess.
Oh, I see. That's very useful to know because I've just been buying more.
Well, we appreciate that, but you can even wash these. So we'll get the soapy water out and we'll suds them up and you know, squish them out and pat them onto a cloth to air dry. And then once they're dry again, you're ready to use them. So keep them clean as you need to. But if they really start to get to where it's just like crumbly and weird, you know, that's probably when it's time to get some new ones. Especially if you're working on some of the pastel papers that are a bit rougher.
Yeah.
You know, they'll bite these up a little bit and you'll have to. But yeah, any other tools, right? Keep them clean and you'll be fine. And
okay, so the paper towel is the best way to sort of get off that excess pastel powder then.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, great. That's really interesting. Now I'm definitely going to try that.
Yeah. And it's always not a bad idea to try to keep them in a container, like instead of keeping them out like with brushes and pencils, putting them in something to keep the oxygen and the light away from them is not a bad idea because, you know, they
are sponges.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That it helps increase their lifespan. So.
Oh, okay. Why is that?
It's a foamy material. This is, you know, they're cosmetic sponge like.
Mm-hmm.
So they're similar to that type of quality. That these are engineered based on that, but they're not exactly the same. Regular cosmetic tools won't work. They don't work as well. Let's put it that way.
Mm.
And so that you're trying to keep like almost everything, think of other materials, even paper, it's best to keep those in a container so that humidity is not warping them and causing the colors to kind of blur when you don't want them to do those things.
Right. Okay. No, that's very useful to know. And on the topic of storage, like how would you say to storage the actual pan pastels themselves?
All right. Well, the pastels themselves don't dry out, so you know, you don't necessarily need to put a lid on them. We have palette trays, which work great to conveniently store the colors. We have them for 10 and 20 colors. It holds the pans in place so they're not sliding around when you're working with them. Mm-hmm. You can quickly take them out of a drawer and have easy access to them. And so that's one way.
Great.
That's great for storage. They travel well. The pans screw together into a stack. You just need to.
And you can pop them right on out like this. Probably not a good color. I should have picked a brighter color, but they pop out. So you can arrange these in the way you want your palette to be set up.
Right.
So very useful. And then these things can be attached. You know, some people attach them onto their tabletop or their roller car. And then they're right there, very accessible to work with, but they pop right out super easy.
Yep. They can, screw together into a stack for traveling. The key is don't really crank that down, too hard. You want to be able to get them.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
And another thing that's important with storage is just to protect them from impact because, they can break or shatter if you drop them on a hard surface or.
Yes, I've done that with one of them. So this one. So what can I do when it looks like this? Like it's just powdered. That's just all crumble and loose now, and I can't. It doesn't obviously work in the same way as the others now because it's not compacted.
Yes. So the easiest way is to basically tap it onto just a piece of paper, like a piece of copy paper. Mm-hmm. Use a tool on that surface and you'll be able to smooth it back out, and you can keep it on there. That can be used to mix color as well.
Tap
some off, get that excess off of there. You can always, come right in and easily just load the tools back up right from there. Is one of the nice things about these is when you work, Norman, that's of course something you didn't want to have happen. It just kind of happened. But a lot of times when people are working with them, they kind of overload the sponges. We'll talk about that technique a little bit as well, but if you overload the sponge because you're trying to get really strong color, it's much more difficult because that's when they get crumbly and dusty and they become much messier to work with. If you just simply load it up, like three swipes is all I'll do, very light, very gentle, and I'll apply it, offload it. And if it's not strong enough, you just simply reload it and put more on. You can get it as strong and as intense as you want to by doing that.
Yeah. Right? Rather than trying to get off as much as you can first.
Yeah. It's a common mistake. It's something that I did when we were first learning about these because, these were not, known to us either until we really, brought them in and started to work with them. And one of the jobs I do as well as material specialist is we do training and we work with, we have a residency program, Sam and Adele residency, that we have artists that come in and they get that residency. And this is one of those products, those materials to show them so that they can incorporate into their work.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of it is just don't overdo it. Just load it up, apply it. It's really an important part is, especially as you start off, is take your time to build the color up. Starts like you do with the background.
Yeah.
Start doing soft backgrounds or just I want to add a little color into this corner, or you're doing one of your portraits and you want to have a quick background. These are perfect for just that soft, almost like a portrait mode on the camera, right? So you want to fuzzy your background so that the details look more prominent. Perfect way just to bring in some color. That's such a beautiful tool to use. So
yeah, definitely. Oh, I'm glad I was using it right then because I usually just like sort of tap it because they're so pigmented. I don't need a lot anyway, especially when I'm doing like it as a base layer to my portraits. And I usually just like, tap it a little bit and then put it on and then keep going back. So I'm glad that was the right way to use it.
Yeah,
that's what I've been telling other people to do.
Yeah.
Is with pan pastel is that you can work and get that more transparent layers and then work in and apply more to build opacity.
And it's
layer really nicely over the top of them themselves.
Yes, they will load. You can build up quite a bit, and I think that just like when you're working with any chalk pastels or pencil, at some point the surface doesn't receive the material so well. That is usually when it's like, okay, am I done? Or do I want to put a little spray fix to kind of lock that down so that I can keep working on top?
Right. That's
a whole other discussion. I know it's one of the very common topics that's important to talk about as well. But you know, really there's no right or wrong with these. That's the great part is don't be intimidated. And it's just getting familiar with the tools and getting familiar with how they load. And they're erasable too. So if you really find you've made a wrong color choice, it's like, that's not working. It's not that big of a deal to just move that or just use your regular erases. Kneaded erases work really well. The white erasers. Really, whatever you...
The electric erasers.
Yeah, really, whatever you like to use now, and that's the beauty of it, is don't abandon your pastels. Don't abandon the tools you're already working with, your colored pencils. Incorporate them together. This is just one big toolbox. That's the way we like to look at all of our tools. You know, all these paint mediums, we try to make things very, very compatible so they play well together. You know, so that you're not fighting and struggling with the materials, that it's like, okay, should I be doing this? If you're doing something really bad, you'll know very quickly. Like like with paint, it'll get weird cottage cheese texture, something like that. Yeah. Like, okay, they probably aren't working well together, but these are just such easy, straightforward things that we're really excited for how these are going to be used out in the market. And there's a really great online community out there for pan pastels that they show all sorts of techniques. As you know, you're part of that community. So that's such a great way for people to learn, because who else better to learn from than a fellow artist that's also using those materials? They'll teach you tricks that we may not even know about.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, so that leads me to asking you, what inspired you to create them in the first place?
All right. So Pan Pastel were created by Bernadette Ward and Lass Lad Forsline. They were the founders that started Pan Pastel in 2007. So it existed for a while before we acquired the company. And what they were looking to do was, you know, they saw that the pastel medium hadn't changed in years, looking for, you know, new and innovative ways to apply color. So after, you know, years of kind of research and development, they came out with this pan format for pastels. And we acquired Pan Pastel in November of 2022. So we've had the brand for about 2 years. You know, we worked closely with Bernie and Lad during that acquisition process, you know, and we had seen them frequently at trade shows and other events. You know, we were familiar with them. So when they were looking to kind of move on, you know, they knew Golden and what we were all about, and kind of trusted us to carry on that legacy. So, you know, while it was developed by them, you know, we're bringing it, you know, into the future, and, you know, carrying on delivering that unique way to apply pastel color for artists.
And they were just a small company. So a lot of what we bring, just like with the Williamsburg oil colors that we have, that, you know, we have such good research and development and quality control and, you know, color matching capabilities and a lot of things that were really a lot more for a, you know, a 2 or 3 person operation to do. So what we were able to do is bring that experience to the table and take a look at how things are performing and, you know, exciting things about color.
Yeah.
That's a really exciting part that's coming up.
Yeah, so
Bryce is ready to tell about, because this is really exciting news for anybody that's been using these for a while.
Yeah, so, you know, since, you know, we acquired the brand, we've been hearing from artists, you know, and we reached out. We said, well, you know, tell us what you think about Pan Pastel, what your hopes are, you know, for the future. And time again, we hear more colors, please. And so in February next year, we're introducing 53 new colors in Pan Pastel.
53. Wow.
So there's a few, you know, key colors that have been absent from the line, you know, that even Bernie and Lad, when we were acquiring, they said, well, you know, we just didn't have time to work on these. We're so busy. And, you know, we kind of feel really bad that we don't have a real strong, like, mid primary yellow, a crimson, a teal, raw sienna, and burnt umber. you know, some real key colors that, you know, artists have noticed are missing from the line. So we're bringing those in. And then if you're familiar with pan pastel or, you know, soft pastels in general, there's a huge array of colors, and many of them start with a pure pigment, a pure color. And then there's tints where some white is added, and shades where, you know, varying amounts of black are added. So currently in the pan pastel line, we have the pure color, and then we have a tint that's quite a bit lighter. And there's a big step in that range. So we're also introducing several medium and light value colors that kind of step between that pure color and tint. So that's kind of the 53 new color introduction comprises those areas.
And that was a really fun project. So part of what our team does, the material specialist, is to assist with Bryce as a brand manager to, you know, be the eyes and ears of artists and use our artistic knowledge to say, this is a good proper step between those two that we had. And that part of it, and what are the new colors? And the other thing is there's a lot of sets. Would you say there's like 30 sets?
There's more than you know, 30 different sets for pan pastel, different assortments of colors. One's geared for portrait or landscape or animal art.
Yeah, so it's not just a set like this. There's one that'll be more geared towards animal art or portraits, human portraits at that point.
Yeah.
So I guess it would work for either, you know?
Yeah. So we're updating the contents of all those to make sure new colors are included. And we worked with Mike and the team to lay out, you know, all the possibilities and say, all right, this set is for landscape. And now that we have this new assortment of colors, what should we add in here to make this the best set for landscape work, to give artists the broadest selection of the colors that they'll experience in nature.
So then you get out the landscape and you start doing some landscapes. You know, we're in upstate New York here. We're in the middle of really nowhere. Really poor cellular service, iffy Wi-Fi. But other than that, we're, you know, this is a really great place, and you've got lots of, you know, rolling hills and, you know, really great landscapes, right? Just look out on almost any window here. And just the same with when we were looking at the portrait set. It was, you starts off with, these are seem like an odd set of colors, you know, and then you start to work with them. And actually, we brought out some, you know, fashion magazines to find like, you know, a nice range of skin tones and highlights and shadows. And then all of a sudden, these colors that seemed kind of odd really, really made sense. So as they were put together very smartly, and we took all that into consideration as we were looking at updating, revamping, and introducing new colors.
Well, that sounds fantastic and very exciting, because I get asked all the time, like, especially with beginners, what pastels should they buy first, and what colors, you know, are the most common to use for specific animals, like dogs or cats and things like that. So I sort of like suggested you've got like an earth tones set, which I think is just such a beautiful set, especially for cats. And it was just a variation, so I think it would be fantastic to have specific animal related colors. That would just be so useful to just recommend and just start, especially for beginners, just to buy that set and start with that.
And there are a lot of great color tools out there in the world. There's, you know, you look at all the palettes you'd see in many of the books and literature, and other people doing, you know, even painting videos and demos, is that the colors usually aren't that far away. So you look for colors that are similar. You know, sometimes we get hung up on the name of a pigment as opposed to the color qualities, the bias of the color. And, you know, it's really it's the same thing here, because they are blendable. You don't think of them because you're offloading a pan, but unlike a chalk stick or a pastel stick, is that these can be blended off onto just a piece of palette paper or whatever, and then you bring it into the actual piece. So you can dial in and adjust much, much more readily with these.
Yeah, I was actually just about to ask you, what makes pan pastels different from other soft pastels?
Yeah, so we already talked about the, you know, the application process, that this is in a, you know, kind of that cake format, the pan format. And applying it with soft tools is very different because it allows you with those different sizes and shapes of tools and sponges to do nice even blocking in of color. You can get transparency and really interesting gradients very easily with them. But that blendability is also, you know, a key differentiator. While we are introducing those new colors and we have that broad palette so you can, you know, pick colors to work with directly, you can also blend and mix, again, to do gradients or transitions easily or to, you know, blend new colors to, you know, tint your blue and make a lighter blue, for instance, you know, with Pan Pastel.
The other really nice part is that as you work with them, think about if you had your stick of soft pastels and you're doing a background, you're going to, you know, tilt it to the side because you want a wider application, or you get those really, really big expensive ones, which are great, but you know, you can't get those in every color usually. But you know, well, I can't afford them. Let me put it that way. You know, there's some pretty, pretty costly, but with these tools, they don't have that crumbliness. So as long as you don't overload those tools, you can get beautiful soft gradations much quicker, much faster, and then incorporate the other tools when you start to do your details and work. And that's the compatibility is really such a key part of what makes these special and unique, is you can use these, pull them out of the toolbox for when you know that's a good application. Much like, you know, I've done a lot of airbrushing and teach airbrushing and show people spray equipment all the time. And, you know, it's not a tool to be scared of. It's just another tool to have. And nor should it be the only tool that you work, because why limit yourself? Use it when it makes the most sense. And, you know, bring in the other tools as you need to. So the comfort level should really be bringing them in slowly. Try a couple of applications like you do with a background to kind of bring color in. That's really the key. And work on those different papers. Maybe there's pastel papers that you've had that doesn't seem like what you would normally would work on. Well, now maybe use the darkest one that's kind of blah and bring in some color and bring some brightness in or lighten things, and then start to work on your portrait. You know, these tools allow that to be, you know, very soft gradations, get that beautiful vignette, and then you can come in, because, you know, if you've done portraits as much as you've done, you realize that you don't do a whole lot of details in the background unless that customer really, really, really wants to pay for all that extra time.
Yeah.
So how do you make that go faster but still look very well painted? And that's been going on for centuries, as backgrounds are very often very blurred and muted. You don't have to spend all the detail time.
Yeah, I think it makes the subject also like look more in focus as well. And that's where your eye is drawn anyway, isn't it? The background is more just to give context or like a character, I guess.
Yeah, you want the main focus to be on the subject of the portrait.
Yeah. Well, also what I also love about using the soft tools with the Pan Pastels is that you don't get a lot of excess pigment falling off. So you're not like covered in all this dust and pigment everywhere. It's just like, especially if you use like very soft, like pastel stubs, it's just like falling off and like making the rest of your paper like quite dirty, I guess. But with the soft tools, I just love that you can put it anywhere and there's no excess. There's no like bits flying everywhere. You don't need to like blow it or move it or whatever. It's just, there's nothing else there.
Which is very useful with the tools, especially, you know, you using those palette knives frequently, is that you're not, you know, in direct contact, you know, your hands don't, you know, necessarily get as best working with them. So
now the other thing too is, you know, speaking of trying to do like quick backgrounds and just starting pieces off, is that on here we have the use of a stencil. Of course, podcast listeners won't be able to see this, but imagine a normal stencil. There's lots of great ones out there, and you can get beautiful, beautiful stencils like this, and put those in, and then use these tools to create nice, soft backgrounds. and kind of get things started really quick. Here's a good example, just to save time and show. Here's not too glossy, right? But this is just a stencil. So you can have really fun backgrounds. You can use pieces of fabric like lace. So I see a couple of cats on the windowsills and curtains behind them in the windows that, you know, you can create those same exact patterns instead of laboriously detail after detail trying to make the pattern. You can use actual fabric and use those soft tools to go against it and create those soft suggested textures and patterns.
Oh, that's such a good idea. I really want to do that now.
And the other thing too is that because these are very different, because you're using a tool, you can use some of those beautiful papers that maybe you've avoided because you know they're not toothy enough normally for pastels, that you can come in and use some of those specialty, you know, handmade papers, you know, beautiful fibers. And with pastel, because with pan pastels, you're using the tool, you're literally forcing the color in. So it's not caking over the texture so quickly. So you can bring color in without overloading the system and keeping the look. So even texture papers and surfaces, you can just kind of glide across the surface and hint highlights very, very quickly with these materials. So
I wonder that's why it works so well on smooth paper then, because I first initially started using them on super smooth Bristol board paper, which isn't like the generic thing you'd normally use pastels on, but I really liked the subtlety of it, but it still gave me a really good base coat to draw my portraits on. So it's very interesting why the pan pastels work on smooth paper as opposed to others.
And it's really because, you know, with a stick, you're kind of depositing much heavier materials. So that really get nice to, you know, work with different surfaces, and they do make a difference. So as you get used to these and you're trying new papers and materials, it's really, you'll see the marks are very different when you go the tool across each one of those. You'll see a rougher, like a pastel papers, they're going to be a much more textural application, whereas a smoother paper, it's a much smoother, softer application. So that's definitely part of that learning experience.
Yeah. So are there like specific, specific surfaces that you would advise artists to use to really bring out the best of the pan pastels?
I would say experiment and try with different surfaces. But in general, I think artists find that pan pastels work better on the smoother end. You know, if you're using sanded paper, the finer grits, you know, 600 or 800 or more. On, you know, printmaking and other watercolor papers, you know, try different kinds of surfaces. The marks will, you know, be different. You know, a grippier surface, as you can imagine, you're loading up that sponge and then depositing the pigment. A more rough sanded paper is going to pull off of that sponge quicker, so you'll get a very dense opaque mark, but it won't, you know, your stroke won't travel as far. So whereas on the smoother papers, it's easier to be, you know, kind of more transparent, you know, longer application strokes. So it definitely plays, you know, a large role in the application of pan pastel. So try different things to see, you know, what you like the best.
And along the lines of trying different things, when you look at us as a company and all the different materials, one of the things we've brought to the oil world and the watercolor world, and now the drawing and pastel world, even more so than before, are all these different grounds and materials that can be used as surfaces. So on the table here, we have, this is a product called fiber paste, and in core we call it cold press ground because it's a material that has a lot of physical texture to the surface. So let me show that as I hopefully don't destroy Greg's paint.
Yeah.
Here.
So if you apply this to a surface, it creates a texture like, you know, handmade paper, you know, really kind of rough and a lot of nooks and crannies. You can smooth it a bit with a wet palette knife and get it more to kind of a cold press water paper surface. But again, yeah, it has a lot of texture to pick up pastels and other drawing media.
And what I did here was I used one of the purple shades, and because it was too heavy-handed, it's like, okay, that's too strong. It's okay. You can now use this extender material and just load that up and just brush that into the surface, and you can
soften. That's not white?
No, it's not white. It's a clear. There's no colors. It's colorless.
Oh.
It's got a very light amount of color, but the key thing is that when you're using it to extend color and to blend, right, it's not going to tint it like using a white wood.
So it's just one of those things that you're able to use these more textural things that, yeah, if you were to use your pencils and chalks, it would just completely eat them right up. Mm-hmm. So very easy to go back and forth. Texture's not a problem. This is a product called Crackle Paste. So you can actually accentuate the pattern using these tools. And there's no wet media here. So you can come in, you don't have to worry about papers buckling and warping. So don't be afraid to try all sorts of different types of surfaces. There's really no limit here.
And that product, the colorless blender, can also be used to blend charcoal, other stick soft pastels. So it's very versatile. It doesn't just need to be used with pan pastel.
Okay. No, I haven't heard of that. So it sounds really interesting.
We also, and one of the key, kind of unique things that we found when we acquired pan pastel and playing with some of our surfaces, this is our pastel ground. It's tinted. Normally it's kind of a translucent white.
Mm-hmm.
Provides a kind of a sanded paper surface, similar to probably grit, pretty toothy, and you can see how that picks up the pan pastel.
Yeah.
And so what we found actually with pan pastel, and again working on that variety of surfaces and smoother surfaces, this is our product called absorbent ground, and it makes it's still a toothy surface, but it's a bit smoother than the pastel ground, and it works beautifully with pan pastel.
The other
great thing too is with these tools, they're not hard, so you can actually use that edge to create shapes and patterns.
That's beautiful.
Quick, thick, thin line. You can see I literally am loading up two colors on this at once.
Yeah.
So I get a blend onto the surface. And if there's a part I just, it's not working for me, or it's just too strong, like in here, I don't like that rougher look. It's just so quick to just come in and smooth it back out. And then as soon as you're done with that, there's no reason you can't come in and work right on top. The surface is always going to have a nice receptive quality because it is a lot of color, but it's not a lot of product on the surface. So your tools will still work very cleanly on that surface, as you find out. I mean, that's really a big part of it.
Yeah. So coming in with colored pencils or marker over top of it, you're not going to kind of load up the tip of that pencil and gunk it up because that pan pastel is kind of pushed into the surface.
Mm-hmm.
A lovely surface to work with. Other media works so well.
Going back
it.
To those surfaces, sorry, the orange one, the tinted pastel ground, you tinted that, or does it come that color?
It doesn't come that color. It comes as a more translucent, whitish ground. And the wonderful thing about them being acrylic rounds is that you can. This is the absorbent ground, applied, and it's hard to even see the outline of it, but this is brushed on when it comes out of the container.
Yeah. Pastel brown is a grit. It's the same grit they use to make the pastel papers.
Yeah. And
liquid form.
And so this is the pastel ground, grittier, pretty translucent. And the wonderful thing about these being acrylic rounds is you can use acrylic paints to tint them, to a neutral tone, to a gray, or whatever color you want to.
Or do color washes on top with acrylic.
Okay.
And then, because those are still toothy, then you can go and work on top of that with all these other media. I've also done basically an underpainting in acrylic and then diluted down the pastel ground and did that more of almost like a wash, and it becomes almost visible at that point, so it doesn't hide the color below full strength.
And then you can go over the top with the pastels.
Yes. So you have a lot of choices like that, and you know, really, you know, because we, you know, we love materials, so we're trying all these different what ifs. We did a piece here. I should say Greg Watson. He's one of our material specialists as well. So he used a Brera roller and rolled on some of our Williamsburg oil paint, and then immediately came in with the pan pastels right on top, and then just used a sharp tool to do sgraffito and drew the line right into it. So you think of it as your pet portrait or just a human portrait like this one. You can come in and you can create that line work without even getting in pencil marks, and then start building from there. So they're very quick. And really that expressiveness of these is that there's very free form, very fast. We had a great artist that showed us these materials that was, you know, brought in with Bernie and Ladd. And her name is Dawn Emerson, wonderful artist. And you can see how gestural and figurative her work is here. It's she's using colors that are really well beyond what I would think of as like what I would use for a normal a portrait of a horse or, you know, that sort of thing. But the line work and the different tools, she's got some masking here by using different types of surfaces to create patterns and textures and surfaces. She's loading up in here a tool with very fine lines like a comb, and then drag chrome across. So you get all these multiple lines, super clean, super fast. And then at any point, you can come in and start bringing your pencils and your tools in. So there's no limit here.
Yeah. Oh, I'm learning so much. So this is very exciting. So for artists trying pan pastels for the first time, what are your tips for blending and layering to achieve the best color?
I think it's a great question. I think it's a lot of it is find that sponge tool that works the best for how you like to work with it. A lot of times it's going to be the simple wedge here. That's a really good one for applying color. And it's really just about use the extender. The extender, you were asking, I think, earlier about what are the like top colors, the top products being, you know, sold.
Yes.
That and this was offline, so you didn't hear it, didn't come in later, but the extender is one of the top five colors.
Yeah, the color.
And even though there's no color, that colorless blender is used to do a nice layer. It becomes very smooth and very silky. And then when you work color on top, it just glides across. So you get really nice soft gradation and buildup. And it's really about, as you get more comfortable, you can start to get more and more bold, like Dawn's work. She's obviously worked with these pretty much since their inception, and she can really create very dynamic work, but don't feel you want to start that way. It's bring things in.
So start with, you know, colors that you typically use for background, because a really natural way to use pan pastel, you know, is to quickly, you know, block in color like that. So that's an easy and natural place to start, you know, with the colors that you would use to lay in a background, and then get familiar and expand from there.
Yeah. And just start with, you know, sketchbooks and start with figure drawing, just playing around, you know, get a piece of newsprint out and just really get used and comfortable with them. You're not going to make mistakes with these products. It's again, you'll know something's not right. It'll look terribly wrong usually, but it's very rare that happens. It's really just have fun. It's color. It's just paint, right? Just paint. So that's really what we're after. Again, you know, we are here to help out. We have a great team of people here, different departments that can help you find the materials, take a look at the different sets. You can ask us any questions in our department. We'll pretty much field about almost any question that comes along. So, you know, even if you've just never used it before, even if you're a brand new artist and you're just getting into it, you know, we're here for everybody. We're not here just for the most professional, high paid artists. We're here for everybody. We're accessible. So don't be afraid to get a hold of us and let us know what we can do for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. So the colorless blender pot, is what's the texture like? Is that the same as the pan pastels themselves, or is it a slightly different texture?
It's really very similar. It doesn't really have a grittiness to it, and mm-hmm. it's really more of just like with an acrylic gel or medium, think of it as just literally the colorless paint. It's paint without pigment. So this is pan pastel without pigment added to it. So it's a base, but because there's no pigment, you're kind of adding all the other stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about, trade secret stuff. But it's really about giving you a very slippery, nice, smooth surface, and you can use it as a base. You can mix it with the color, so you can load up your sponge and then put it into the pot and then work with it on the surface. Then you'll make more and more transparent colors. So if you want a strong color, just use it right out of the container. Mm-hmm. That to soften and smooth, but still being able to, you know, give you that nice direct line work.
Right. And you know, you were saying before how when you're using rougher surfaces, how when you're using the sponge, it just sort of, it doesn't like travel, the color doesn't travel as much. Yeah. If you used the other pigment, the colorless one, would that help it travel like on the rougher surfaces?
Yeah, really, as you load more up, it just becomes smoother and softer to work with. So mm-hmm. if you have a rough surface, put the extender down, because that's not going to be a color texture. It's just going to be filling in some of the texture on the paper or the surface. Mm-hmm. And then when your paint goes on top, now it's going to behave like it's gliding across the smoother paper.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's very interesting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So can you share with us some common mistakes that artists might make when they're starting out and how you can avoid them?
All right. You kind of observed that, pan pastel doesn't make as much dust, so it's pretty clean to work with. One of the key mistakes, that I think we all experienced when we first started trying, pan pastel, and we see a lot of artists make, is to kind of overwork the sponge when they're loading it up in the pan. You only need two or three light swipes. And if you want more intense color, apply and then come back and get some more and apply, again. If you're, swiping at the pan too much, kind of overworking it, you'll notice, because you'll see some dust on the pan. So I think that's one of the key mistakes that we see.
And not getting the tools. Again, I'm not a salesman. That's Bryce's job. But if you have the tools, it makes working with these so much easier. Mm-hmm. And again, these are great blending tools in general. So if you do drawing with anything, charcoal or whatever, having these around, they're just wonderful additions to that toolbox to work with. And they really allow you to make a lot of nice edges, shapes, and flat, smooth areas. So that to me is probably the biggest one. And start with thin applications, just get comfortable with them. That's really the key here.
Yeah, and then lastly, again, is the considering the surface. The application is going to vary so much depending on the surface you put it on. So if you have a sanded paper or something that you typically use and you get pan pastel and you're trying to work mm-hmm. with it, you just don't like the way that's turning out, try some different textures and papers, because it's going to work differently than stick pastels. It'll work great with them. They can all be used together, but again, that surface, try different things to, kind of find out what you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, great. And what advice would you give to artists looking to combine pan pastels with other mediums? So you were saying before you could do an acrylic base layer. What other suggestions do you have?
Well, it's the acrylic is a big world of surfaces right there. But I think we've been discovering using surfaces that are still a little tacky, like that fresh oil film, or think of printing inks, surfaces you normally wouldn't think of incorporating it in, but you can use stamps. So you can load these up with stamps, or you can load the stamp up with an ink, apply that to the surface, and then the pastel will now be receptive to that area. Mm-hmm. So you can do localized areas you normally wouldn't be able to use. So if you want a beautiful, very slick background in general, and then you want an area to work and do your, let's say, one of your portraits, you can just focus on putting that material there to make it tacky enough to then hold on to it. We also have a really great pair of examples here.
Oh, wow.
This is encaustic. So you can use this to add color into the encaustic wax. The wax is going to be receptive enough. And then when you heat it back up, it'll soften and kind of melt in. And then you can put another layer on top after that cools. So you can literally embed the color into the surface. And here's a great example of one of those stencils. Stencil, and then once that's done, then you can come right back with your tools. And if you want to hide the fact you did a stencil, this is just your outline to work with. But for me, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, get comfortable with it using an outline, using things that are, you know, comfortable. You know, like when I'm doing watercolor, I do more like paint by numbers. I create my outline and I fill in the areas. So it's more like, you know, paint by numbers, fill in the blank. How you want to start with these, really get them out, start pushing them around. You'll see really quick where their advantages are. So don't overthink, just start playing with them. Start with a limited palette that makes sense. If you want to focus on maybe the backgrounds, choose colors that have that range. If you want to really work into the actual portraits, find sets that give you that ability. But, you know, I think you'll find that they're just such an easy thing. As you know, I mean, I know that you're a big fan, and that's why we're here today, just because it's such a new tool. And once you discover them, it's like, where did these come from? How have I not heard of them? Just really, it's just practice and play with them.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I do love using them with color pencil. I find them so, because like we said before, there's not a lot of excess that is on your paper. It doesn't, like, I guess, get pushed off when you're trying to color over the top with color pencil. It just blends over the top really nicely. I just love that about them.
You're putting into the fibers. You're embedding into the surface as opposed to it being on the surface. So that it doesn't change it. So if you have a surface, a paper that you love to work with, these aren't going to radically change that surface. They're just going to complement it and tone it. And that's very empowering. That gives you a lot of range, a lot of things to play around with. Again, you know, you get a pack of those pastel papers and there's always that one color. It's like, that's just not the right one for me. You can tone the entire thing with these. You can cover up those papers entirely, but never lose the tooth and then start working with it. So really they're very wonderful. We have people that use these for doing miniatures. So the little 3D miniatures and the game pieces and things like that. They'll use this to create like little rust spots and little patinas.
Oh, okay.
People that do like trains, they'll use like the black to make like a soot. So there's all sorts of things. You can use these for surfaces you wouldn't imagine. You can use these right into a painting, you can into a canvas, whatever you want to work with, raw wood. You can tone the wood. So there's really, it's an imagination piece. It's what we love about having a tool now that's so innovative, is it fits so well with just create things and try things out. You're really not going to make a lot of mistakes here.
So what do you suggest in terms of fixing it then? Like, would you suggest using fixative or something else, especially if you're using it on like wood or different materials that aren't necessarily paper?
Well, it's, if you already have a set of fixatives and you've got a favorite brand, different, you know, ones that you really like to work with your drawing media already, I would definitely start with that to begin with, because literally fixes are mostly about, it's a lot of a solvent and it's kind of gluing the particles together. So even if you put it behind a frame, spraying some fixative kind of keeps things in place. So it's not falling down in between the glass and the mat.
Yeah.
So fixatives are used for that purpose. They're very different. There's, of course, workable fixatives, which help to improve the tooth and regain the tooth. it's less needed here. So it's usually just kind of locking color down so that you can then not have it slipping around while you're doing more work. But if you're going to incorporate it into, let's say, a stretch canvas painting, one that you're just going to have frame, no glass, then you really need to get into something like the archival spray varnish. Because a varnish has much more resin, okay? So a fix is lots of solvent, a little bit of resin. It's just kind of slightly gluing things together, but it's not a coating. It can't be wiped and cleaned very easily. A varnish is a more substantial layer, and that protects everything below. So you can work with it, but you really have with any of these things, if you're trying a new fix you've never used before, or you're trying some spray varnish, a different sheen of varnish, you have to practice on the colors you're going to work with. I don't care what the media, you know, make strips of color and then cover part up and then spray some over it and do maybe one, two, three fix coats so you can see progressively colors that will change.
Yeah, because anything applied, you know, especially as it saturates it, it's going to change the appearance, deepen some colors. So, you know, always test first, try things out. And that'll kind of let you know what to expect before you're spraying something over your finished work and thinking, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, so.
I think I had an email and conversation with test for your application, because it really does come down to you doing these things as an artist. And, you know, we're here to help guide and help provide any support, but really it's when you do these in your studio and your hand and what's your amount of fix that you apply, that's when you're going to actually get the real results so that you can predict what's going to happen. You don't find, those are usually more of when the mistakes happen, is when you don't test that fix it over the varnish and all of a sudden it rapidly changes your work. And it's like, you probably work on deadlines and things on commissions and it comes right down to the wire and, you know, you're 3 o'clock in the morning finishing it because it's supposed to be delivered tomorrow for the cat's birthday party. I don't know. So you've got to work quickly. And if that's not when you want to test.
Yeah, you don't want surprises. That,
it's not quite that dramatic, but yes, it is dramatic.
I'm sure there's a couple of podcast listeners that are nodding their head. Yep, I've been there. Yep.
Yeah. No, I do like how it does, the fixative can subtly deepen the colors, because that helps a lot when you're sort of like trying to enhance the contrast a bit and make the blacks a bit blacker, especially if you're drawing a black cat or a black dog. I find it finishes it nicely, I think, when you're using a bit of fixative over the top.
Yes. And finding out the different sheens and what they do, that definitely is part of it. And fixing and with, you know, having a more glossy finish deepens the colors beautifully. It's knowing that that's going to happen and anticipating it, because you've done the test, the before and after. So while you're working,
and I guess wanting that to happen as well.
Exactly. But yeah, those are all great questions. And, you know, videos, and we've got lots of literature and documents, and I write a lot of articles. Our department, we write a lot of the articles at justpaint.org. So if you want to read like the whole history of Pan Pastel, for example, go there. The story is spelled out beautifully and more eloquently than I can probably do right now. So.
Oh, wonderful. So in terms of like storing art, like we just talked about like varnishes and fixatives. Would you say that's the best way to store your Pan Pastel artwork?
Definitely having some sort of release paper or even like a parchment paper, something that is going to help protect so things aren't being stacked together and rubbing. Ideally, nothing's touching the surface, but we live in the world of reality. And sometimes that's not possible when you're doing paper and paper and you have to build things up. So putting those interlayers in, I've got some release paper that we have here. And you know, it's just a translucent material. Some have a slight wax material embedded in. Some are called glassine and things like that. Primate media, that you can get away with a lot of different types of things like this. If you're doing acrylic painting especially, they're a bit too tacky for some of those materials. So a really good release paper is a silicone impregnated release paper. So if you do an online search, you'll see companies sell those materials. And they're some of the best, because just like a parchment paper that you bake on, you know, the reason it doesn't burst into flames in the oven is because it's coated with silicone that basically is a fire retardant that protects it.
Okay.
And silicone is very good for not, things don't stick really well to silicone, right? So if you have that embedded into that paper, it means that nothing that you've used for that artwork is going to stick either, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, protecting is really, transportation is probably the most dangerous part. Storage, try to always store vertically. I know, not easy to do, but perhaps do more of a stacked layering system, like put them in a series of, you know, good boxes or something, archival boxes that don't have a lot of acidity. But you know, I don't think anything is different with already the challenges you have with other drawing media. It's just the nature of working on paper. It's a delicate material. You're working with delicate, you know, media. You have to treat it carefully. You have to, you know, not, you know, think that it's going to hold up to, you know, throw it in the back of the bus and driving along and, you know, sliding back and forth. It's just, it's not meant to do that. So,
yeah.
So if you want bulletproof, then you've got to go to some really heavy, heavy industrial coatings. And, you know, to me, that's beyond, it loses the whole thing. You might as well just put it behind glass at that point.
So we said before, like, how there isn't lots of excess dust, so you don't necessarily get smudging, but you can get smudging sometimes, I guess, if you're, you know, your fingers are all over it. So what do you suggest artists can do to get rid of the smudging, or to not have smudging in the first place?
You probably know a lot of those answers already. I'm sure that you, every artist working with it has had a handful of graphite and materials right in that spot, and you smudge those things. I think a lot of it is trying to use an arch or something, or if you're going to put a piece of paper down, just put something that's not going to be, don't use a rough paper. Use a nice soft piece of paper. Use one of these pieces of the parchment or whatever. Lay that down, and then you can work on top, but make sure that's not moving around either. So you may want to put that down and gently tape beyond the piece so it stays in one area, so then when you lay your hand on it, it's not sliding with your hand, because that motion is what's going to cause blurring and smearing. If you need to transport, it's like maybe a good idea to put a little spray fix on to lock it down before you do those things. No, I don't think there's any, I don't have any revelations for you. I'm sorry, that's a not an easy question, but no, it's really about just being careful. And you know, I don't think you need to get the mall stick out, but that's not a bad idea either. That's why they use them in the oil paint.
Yes.
So that your hand and your wrist rests on that as opposed to leaning against the surface.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. They do erase quite well, though, don't they, the pan pastels? Because I've personally used just my electric eraser on it. But does it work with many erasers?
We've tested a whole range from the regular pink ones from a number two pencil, and all the neon rubber, and the white ones, and the electric razors, or erasers usually have that white, I can't remember what's the name of it. It's a vinyl eraser is what those white nubs are on those erasers. And it works really, really well. There's also, we have they're Miracle erasers, Miracle Sponge.
Okay.
I think I have one.
Yes. I've seen those.
I think there's Mr. Clean here in the States. I don't know if Mr. Clean has made his way across the pond or not, but, you know, these things really are great for lifting that off of there as well.
Okay.
Clean sponge will work. The tools, the pan pastel soft tools, you can help to lift up some of that color. But they're erasable that way.
Yeah. What would you say is the best eraser then? Like, say I put a bit of, I don't know, black on my piece of paper. What would be the best way to remove that?
I think in our experience, those white vinyl erasers, you know, are most successful. They don't create a lot of crumbles and dust in doing that, and they pick up the color really well.
Yes.
Really easy to use.
I think, the vinyl are the standard for a lot of them because they're very clean to work with.
Okay. Oh, that's very, very useful to know. So what should artists consider when they're selecting pastels for a specific subject like animals, landscapes, or portraits?
Probably the most difficult question you've asked today, because it really is such a personal choice that it's probably going to be dependent on the style of the artist. And if they're an outgoing artist, they may want to really use vibrant, intense color. It's really harder to determine. But again, this is where those sets really come into play, is that, you know, we worked really hard to make sure that they would play well for those applications. But a lot of it is, well, you're doing a portrait, it's outside. So do you choose the portrait set or choose a landscape set? Maybe it's just a matter of you have to have a series of both. But, you know, really, I think the choice that you're already making with your colored pencils and, you know, your drawing tools and the chalk pastels, just look at the colors you have there, because you're going to find that we have really such a great selection, especially now with that big range of colors that we were adding in February. You really shouldn't have the want anymore to, you know, saying, well, I don't have that color to work with. You know, but it's part of it. You know, it's like, look at like your ever expanding colored pencil selection. You know,
you've got
those ones, you've got ones that are a little waxier, these ones, crayons, you know, it's just, it's a hard thing. It's, you know, I'm a little biased here because, you know, I work here at the candy factory. So, you know, I can choose anything. So it's hard for me to make a lot of those choices sometimes, but really a lot of it is start with that set of colors. And it may be, as you know, it could be just that particular feline. You need the colors that are going to work best for that particular animal. That's how you start. And then as you work with them, you know, you might get one of the big orange cats, the Garfield cats. I don't know what the names of them are, but, you know, that's a whole different color set. So it really is something that is going to be dependent on what your subject matter is.
Yeah, definitely. What do you suggest is, like, I don't know, the go-to colors, say pick two, which would be the most useful for artists?
Pick two. Well, I'm a big fan of Payne's grays. I like them much better than just a regular black. I just find them to be subtler. I like the color tone. But, you know, really, if you look at the numbers that speak to what artists are buying, white and black are some of the most important ones to have. But I think just that set of primaries. I mean, we have beautiful, there's the Hansa yellows, there's a whole range of new reds now, permanent red. You've got your standard ultra blues and cobalt blues. These are colors that are all, you know, no different than a primary set you'd get for, you know, regular paints.
Yeah, I've got the permanent red, recent purchase.
Perfect. Yeah. And it's really, because they do blend, that's where you want to, you know, start with a very small set just to see if they're for you or not. You know, a white and a black, or, you know, an earth colored. I'm very partial to burnt umber. I think it's all purpose type of brown. It's a neutralizer color. But if you have that type of set, you can then take these, and again, you can load the sponge into a couple of them and work off on a piece of paper to the side and use it as your palette. So you can make really any color that you want to. But, you know, a lot of times it comes down to convenience. You know, primaries are great if you really love mixing a lot of colors together. But, you know, at a certain point, it's just like, pick that color that you've been making that takes you a hard time to match. That's what we would call a convenience color, but you buy it because that's one that you want to use. Like, there's colors that have more of an ochre, Naples yellow type of color. Beautiful color to have in. It really works with so many different applications. There's, you know, these off whites. They're buff colors.
Yes.
Nicer to kind of start a painting off with those. And then when you come in and you really want that shine on the nose, that high, when you want those highlights, now bring in the titanium white and really get that pop. I think that's something a lot more artists, because if you start with titanium white for everything, you know, you're doing clouds, everything's going to look like it's right in front of you. There's no recession.
No, it's funny you said
that. We have those conversations all day long. I mean, those are colors. Yeah. That's our language here. So we love talking about those things.
Yeah.
It's such an individual thing, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I did think it was strange how you said Payne's gray was your go-to colors, just because you sell a set of grays and it's like got black and then a, like, what is this? Payne's gray, and then it's got lighter tones and then white. And that was the first set that I ever bought of Pan Pastels, and I've still got it now. Like, it's just so useful and flexible, I guess, for anything that you're drawing or coloring, you know, landscapes, portrait wise. So I do suggest that set quite a lot.
Yeah,
it's really just nice that it's confirmed that's a good go-to color. Yeah,
and again, the you know, black, white, and the colorless blender are, you know, among the top-selling open stock blend and shade set. That's just those three, which is a great foundation to start with.
And if you have white and black, you can make some shades. So if you start with that more primary set, the base colors, you can adjust on the fly for doing highlights and shades and details and all that. So
fantastic. So where can our audience learn more about Pan Pastels, and where can they purchase them to try it for themselves?
So the best resource, you know, is panpastel.com, our website. There is tons of information about all of the colors, but also, you know, many tutorials and videos. There's links to a lot of tutorials where artists are, you know, demonstrating various techniques. So tons to learn. And then where to buy. Many art materials retailers, both brick and mortar, and online. So, you know, check out where you normally, you know, get your art supplies. Likely that Pan Pastel will be there.
Yes. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much. I've learned so much about this a medium that I use all the time. And I'm sure our listeners will be very excited to hear about all the new colors that are coming out. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think that's it. The new colors, again, they start shipping out of our factory in February. So
February. Great. Oh, I'm so excited to see them.
Bring them next year. You know, I see them showing up on store shelves. So definitely keep an eye out. We have them up again on our website at the start of the new year. So
that
would be a great place to go and check them all out.
But really, any questions your audience has, feel free to contact us. Let us know what we can do for you. Okay.
Yeah. Anything
that's fantastic.
On the website, any questions that we weren't able to answer in the podcast, you know, we do have that wonderful resource in our tech support. So give us a call, send us an email at help@goldenpaints.com, and you know, that would be the best, you know, way to get a hold of us.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me.
Our pleasure.
On this podcast, and thank you for everybody for listening.
Enjoyed listening. Remember, you can watch this podcast with video and no ads at learnmycraft.com, where you'll also find animal art practice journals, books, and tutorials to get you started. Hit subscribe and follow the podcast, and we'll see you next time.